across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Along with Greg Bach and Waukesha and Brittany Merlot in the Wausau area, our meteorologist for Civic Media, who's going to tell us about the weather forecast heading into the Memorial Day holiday weekend. Good morning. Nice to have you back at 7:06. Coming up on the program, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel will preview his amicus show for Saturday morning, all about legal issues, and we'll talk about the Trump trial closing arguments that begin next week, Tuesday. Then we'll talk to Mark Jacob and then Dan Schumacher talking about sports. Now a little note, good morning from Rob in Tigerton, said Pat, who learned an important lesson this week about pre-reading what Rob's going to say and don't just read it live on air. Partly cloudy and 52 degrees, busy mowing yards yesterday in the Tigerton and Wittenberg areas. Had lunch at Rachel's Roadside with some shrimp tacos. I hope someday I can treat all of you to shrimp tacos from Rachel's Roadside. Hey kids, road trip, show road trip. Yes, please.
Oh man, we're just gonna do a show from Rachel's Roadside.
We could. Yes. Can we do it on a Yacht Rock Friday yet this summer? Because if we do, then we can play Yacht Rock songs. Like, I don't know, maybe at Rachel's Roadside, do they have piña coladas? Rachel, if you don't have a speaker system there and you're not playing this, we're not coming.
No, Rachel, if you don't have it, we'll bring something to play it. That's how...
True.
Keep it positive here, Pat.
There you go. Thank you.
Except for this song, which is about two trash people, if you listen to those lyrics.
I love these people. They clearly understand. You know, they understand that...
Hey,
sometimes you just gotta fill out a want ad and leave your person, and turn out you find your person. Yeah. Romeo, come on, Shakespeare, step it up.
Yeah, I really want to cheat on my wife.
How do we do this? The newspaper.
A personals ad. Yeah. Brittany, I don't know how old you are, but people used to take out a thing in the paper called a personals ad. Creepy.
They did not.
Well, of course they did.
Oh yeah, they did.
Was full of it. Yes.
Oh wow.
You know, single white male looking for love, hoping you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain. Rob tells us, yes, they do have speakers at Rachel's Roadside. So we can play this song about trashy people there.
Yeah.
So that will work. Well, we were talking yesterday about Yacht Rock and Yacht Rock Day at the Brewers game. And we're going to do something with that on Friday, July 26th. And saying, you know, if need be, we're going to have to bring our own, you know, boombox to play some Yacht Rock, maybe some hats or some other attire for appropriate Yacht Rock. And obviously, pina coladas are going to have to be served at this thing.
I only see Pat in a full captain's outfit.
Ahoy.
Yeah.
Ahoy, Polloy. I could see it.
Captain Stewing in Chippewa Falls.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I already actually kind of pulled that off once. That at my prom, and now y'all know how big my hair was at that age, had really big 80s hair going on there, a white tux that I went to prom in. Thankfully, only one photo exists, and only I know where it is. So.
Rocking a crite fro that was...
a crite fro.
Epic.
That's going to stick. At some point, somebody has said to their radio, hey, there's a meteorologist there. Could she give the weather, please? So
too bad. We're talking about sports now. All right. So.
Such a better topic.
Brittany, it was clear here a couple hours ago. Clouds are rolling in. I saw a big old nasty blob on the radar working its way through Iowa and southwest Minnesota. I guess that's foreshadowing, right?
Yes, it is. There's actually a tornado that was on the ground in Iowa, headed towards Illinois. So it is further south than us. We don't have to worry about that. But that line of storms is going to be pushing into the western part of the state here within the next 30 minutes or so. So La Crosse, Eau Claire, you're going to get this before us in Wausau. But it's going to be moving across the state throughout this morning. Then behind it, we're looking at a few more storms firing up as well, especially into the southern parts of the state. And then that looks to roll through between 1 to about 6 this afternoon and evening. Those could also have the potential to become strong to severe. So the ones this morning right now, we are looking at gusts in there up to about 60 miles per hour and some quarter-size hail. That's what's happening at this moment. So as those move through the state, expect that possibly. But otherwise, heavy downpours. Another quarter of an inch to 3/4 of an inch of rainfall is expected today. It's going to be a wet one and breezy still and still kind of cool. Upper 60s to low 70s today. Tomorrow, we will dry things out. Ton of sunshine. Nicest day of the weekend. We're all going to be in the upper 60s to low 70s again. And then we really cool things off for Sunday and Monday. Another system strikes us, bringing another inch of rainfall, some more showers and storms. So it is going to be damp and cooler. All of us will be in the 60s on Sunday and Monday as well.
Not me.
Well,
boom.
Somebody's going.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Washington, D.C., where it's going to be in the mid-80s and probably swampy humid.
This also from Tony up in Hayward. Apparently, on Nightlight last night with Pete Schwabba, James Kelly, civic media reporter based here in Chippewa Falls, was the guest and said he hasn't been on Pat's boat despite being in Chippewa Falls. I thought Pat took out everyone. Well, first things first, no, I don't. I'm a very exclusionary person. Second, the boat's not in yet because, as listeners figured out earlier this week, Pat's been writing a lot of checks. The engine on the pontoon has conked out and needs a repair. We had the trees that came down, the garage project. So, James, I'm going to have to keep working for a while before I can afford to get you on the boat, but it'll happen.
What if we want to contribute to the Pat's motorboat? Nope, that's poor.
Nope, moving on from there.
Pat's pontoons, boat motor. Nope. Pat's boat motor fund.
Brittany, it's been great talking to you. You have a wonderful weekend. I'm glad. Look, the rain will take care of the spring allergies, and you're going to be right as rain next week.
Oh, yes, exactly. And I want to bid on that boat, so keep my name in the running.
All right. Will do. Take care, guys. Brittany. Have a fun weekend. In the Up North News daily newsletter, sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Notes in there include about how Wisconsin is about to consume an unsettling amount of brats. Every Memorial Day weekend since 1983, Madison has hosted an event that's become the world's largest brat fest. It wasn't always, of course, a record setter. As Christina writes in the newsletter, in the early 1980s, Tom and Margaret Metcalf set up a stand outside their family-run grocery store one Memorial Day weekend and started selling brats for just 50 cents as a thank you to their customers. The word spread. A few years later, the Metcalfs were serving so many brats they needed volunteers from Madison area nonprofits to help. That's when Tom and Margaret decided to donate their brat sale proceeds back to these local nonprofits. In 1999, after selling 35,000 brats in 3 days, Tom asked his brat supplier if he thought that was a lot. The supplier said, well, more than Oktoberfest, more than County Stadium, so you might be the world's largest brat fest. And you can learn more about that in our daily newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. We talked to Kia Vakil in our last hour, Courier Newsroom national political reporter, and part of the topic was on monopoly power and things that the Biden administration has been doing on behalf of consumers. So you've got, you know, going after junk fees on credit cards and from airlines. You now have somebody finally going after Ticketmaster and their parent company, Live Nation, for their monopoly practices. You have executives with big oil companies who may have been conspiring with OPEC countries, with foreign countries, to keep your gas prices artificially high. But then there's also the mergers and acquisitions that go on in this country all the time. They get government approval because these companies, you know, make these big promises. If you let the two of us merge, or if you let one of us acquire the other one, it's going to be good for competition. It's going to be good for consumers. It's going to be good for workers. Is it, though? And what if it isn't? That's where Senator Tammy Baldwin comes in. A story this morning in the Journal Sentinel from Rick Barrett says that Senator Baldwin has introduced legislation that calls for a review of already completed mergers to determine whether they have reduced competition, or have they reduced competition? Have they increased prices? Have they resulted in large job losses or other harmful effects? The Stop Bad Mergers Act would require the Federal Trade Commission to continuously monitor previous mergers. And if it's determined that they now violate antitrust laws, the agency would have the authority to remedy the situation, including by requiring divestitures and breakups. And this comes back to a foundational principle of mine. And look, I am not pro-death penalty for people. I am pro-death penalty for corporations. It's something we should have had a long time ago. Much like you don't have an inherent right to murder somebody, there is a price to be paid. The same goes for people who engage in criminal activity at the corporate level with a corporation that they own. You don't have an inherent right to always own it. If you're ripping off customers, if you're ripping off your workers, if you're destroying the environment through your processes, yeah, there are fines. There are other sanctions. It's always possible, but not likely, that executives go to jail. But the corporation can also have its charter taken away by us the people, through our government, to say this business, you know, needs to be in a timeout, the corporate version of prison or a death penalty if something is egregious enough. And that's not exactly what Tammy Baldwin's looking for here, but what she's looking for is to say, hey, just because you were granted a merger or an acquisition based on these promises, if you're now breaking these promises, what good does it do to have government approval of something if you only keep your promise long enough until something becomes official? What, then you get to do anything you want? No. If there is a no-backsies rule on mergers and acquisitions, Senator Baldwin is saying, let's get rid of that. Let's review these things. Let's make sure, as the story goes on to say, that the Government Accountability Office can study consolidation in the manufacturing sector and require that more information be provided to the FTC and the Department of Justice to ensure that they can evaluate the effects of the mergers on workers. She cites the 2018 purchase of Wisconsin-based Railvac by Energizer, which Baldwin says resulted in reduced competition, higher prices for consumers, and hundreds of layoffs. Not that we expect this to pass this year, but just getting it introduced and having that conversation is a net positive for American capitalism overall, for those who follow the rules and are good to their consumers, workers, and environment. Jim Santel coming up next. You're up north. A Yacht Rock cruise into the holiday weekend. You got to include Pablo Cruz. It's 7:20 on Up North News Radio, heading into the Memorial Day weekend here. Tuesday mornings at 6:20, Up North News social media manager Sharita Booker reviews the social media posts that we put up that are getting read the most, watched the most, shared the most, clicked on the most. So look for that every Tuesday at 6:20. If you're not up for the 6 a.m. hour of Up North News Radio, then listen back as a podcast. Go wherever you get your podcast. Look for Up North News Radio. Subscribe, and you can listen back to those early hours, you know, on demand, whenever you'd like to. Another program that you hear here on the Civic Media Radio Network is Amicus Law Review with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. Saturday mornings at 9, played back on Sunday mornings on Civic Media stations around Wisconsin. And Jim is now also kind enough to join us on Friday mornings at 7:20 to give us a little preview of what he's going to be talking about, which this morning for us includes that big racial gerrymandering case out of South Carolina that had me just livid in the last hour. And now here's Jim Santel to set me straight on, you know, whether I was right or wrong on criticizing what Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito wrote in the case. Jim Santel, good morning. How are you?
Pat, good to be with you once again on a morning that is going to be like others, in which we get lots and lots of decisions from the Supreme Court in the coming days and weeks. And this is one of them. This is what I've been looking at for a long time, anticipating it. It comes in the wake of two other cases. Just earlier, the Supreme Court had pretty much let a Louisiana situation remain in place with respect to some voting. And you recall that last year in the state of in the state of Alabama, that they had found that, in fact, some drawing of lines there had diluted racial potency of the black populations there. So the court is somewhat not all over the place, but at least when it comes to these cases, is not in a direct line. Yesterday, as you said, earlier this week, as you said, the Supreme Court finding that with respect to what's going on in South Carolina, the voting map is just fine. And the reference is a bleaching of African-American voters, which sounds very stark and very harsh, but regrettably, that's where we are this morning.
That is where we are, and it is, again, that Samuel Alito, who's already, you know, under fire for insurrectionist-friendly flags at two of his houses, would write this decision that said, in so many words, and very much, it seems, in so many words, how dare anybody accuse these legislators of racial gerrymandering? Because apparently accusing these Republican legislators of racial gerrymandering seems to be worse than actual racial gerrymandering is what he was essentially trying to say. I mean, he was working so hard to defend one side in the case rather than determining it on the evidence, which a lower court said was very clearly a racial gerrymander.
Absolutely. And so you do get this language, again, lots to unpack these days when it comes to Sam Alito and his contempt for many things, his cynicism about the very institutions that he has sworn to protect. But he says we start with the presumption that the legislature acted in good faith. All right, maybe we'll begin there, but then goes on to saying that courts should avoid grave accusations against state lawmakers. Well, courts need to look seriously at what lawmakers are doing, and if in fact they're in violation of our fundamental principles about ensuring that people have the right to vote, then that presumption, if you will, of good faith goes away very, very quickly. And this notion, once again, as you said, that we should not be quick to hurl accusations at the political branches. But political branches are doing things in America in 2024, and not only should we be accusing them of that, but we should be remedying that. The court, through Alito, saying, don't say that. And oh, by the way, we're not going to remedy anything either. This is a very troubling opinion. We plainly get dissents from the likely justices here, and among them, Elena Kagan, saying we're electing hurdles to make it all but impossible to challenge voting gerrymanders in the future. And that's the other long-term consequence, setting up this very high set of standards that change, once again, the way in which we look at these things, not objectively, but under this lens of presumption that what the legislature has done is good, and only the most extraordinary circumstances requiring overturning it. Stunning.
It was barely acceptable about 5 years ago when Justice Anthony Kennedy and Chief Justice Roberts and others said, you know, we can't really determine a partisan gerrymander. I mean, we know a racial gerrymander, but we can't really determine a partisan one. And now that the court is 6-3 right wing, they're saying we should not even be in the business of questioning the integrity of people who might set up, you know, a racial gerrymander. I wish that was the most outrageous thing about this ruling. But Jim, it's not. It's Clarence Thomas saying in here that Brown v. Board of Education, the Supreme Court in 1954 took a boundless view of equitable remedies through extravagant uses of judicial power. The black Supreme Court justice just said Brown v. Board was an extravagant use of judicial power looking for equitable remedies. Heaven forbid we try to find equitable remedies. I believe that's called justice, Jim. Right. I believe it's called justice.
Exactly. And again, this language here, what often happens, as we know in the Supreme Court, is you'll write something in a concurrence or even sometimes in a dissent, and you put down some markers, which is what he and Alito and sometimes the others do as well, hoping that that day will come when you can reach back to the earlier opinion and say, well, look at that. Yes, indeed, there is some foundation for believing that earlier cases, in this case, Brown versus Board of Education, by the way, a unanimous opinion back in 1954, Chief Justice struggling and getting there to get a unanimous decision by our highest court that indeed separate schools, separate entities are inherently unequal and unconstitutional, overruling Plessy, overruling Dred Scott, other things in our history, and making certain that people are treated as human beings in our nation. Clarence Thomas, as he said before, harkens back to a day before that time. He's done this before when it comes even to privacy rights. And so let's, in addition to revisiting reproductive rights, let's revisit things that are also in the scope of privacy rights, including contraception and other things and all of that very upsetting in context, not only the decision, but also the language that's being used here to redefine who we are as Americans.
This court is taking us into a very dark place. It is out of the mainstream of American values. And if Trump were to get to appoint more justices, this is something that will be even harder to remedy over the years. Now, the closing arguments in the Trump hush money trial don't start till Tuesday. Things wrapped up earlier in the week with the final witness. So how about just a quick preview of what you expect to hear in closing arguments before jury instructions and deliberations?
Sure. Those jury instructions, again, being worked on right now by the judge and the parties, that is very normal. What you're going to hear, of course, from the prosecution is that you've got this very compelling, almost unrefuted account of what happened here. You've got witnesses who've got some baggage, but reasons to believe them, even inside their own faults and their own missteps, if you will, in their own lives. From the defense, you're going to hear these witnesses who are key to the prosecution are not to be believable because of things like they've lied in the past. They've got this history of engaging this kind of conduct. Don't believe them. Don't return a criminal conviction based upon this flimsy record. My own view, very strong case. Very strong case, very compelling. And this jury, if it does its job, and I think it will, should return a verdict finding him guilty of all of the 34 counts.
And then we can get back to the political aspect of, you know, the degree to which it helps and hurts him. So a lot to talk about a week from now. Jim Zentel, have a wonderful holiday weekend. Good to see you.
You also, you and your listeners as well, a thoughtful, pensive Memorial Day weekend coming up.
Exactly. Thank you, sir. Mark Jacob joins us next. You're up north. It's a Yacht Rock Friday heading into the holiday weekend, so of course you have to include Poco as well. I was telling Greg in the last hour that I received in the mail yesterday a couple of nice things. One of them was my my official Civic Media t-shirt that I'm holding up for folks watching on social media, but I'm holding it really close to the camera here, so it's hard to tell how good it looks. But anyway, if you are looking to support Civic Media, maybe add to your wardrobe at the same time, there is now a Civic Media store. Head over to the Civic Media homepage. That would be civicmedia.us. Not only can you find a list of stations and shows, there's now a store button in the upper right corner. You can get some shirts and some other gear for showing your support for refreshing hometown radio. That's over at civicmedia.us. Also holding up for the camera here is our Friday mug. I've been going with Roy Kent the past few weeks, but I'd almost forgotten that I had this one. And so in honor of Mark Jacob joining us now, I wanted to make sure I held up the one that says, my mug says, "I am silently correcting your grammar," which I think any good editor or journalist has to have one of those. Mark, how are you?
Doing great.
Good. Nice to have you along here. We're trying to get into the holiday weekend on a smooth Yacht Rock, type of note, because some of these headlines are just absolutely crazy. We've talked about the Supreme Court case in our last hour upholding a racial gerrymander. Now we're going to get into the economy because, again, it's something that we've hit on many times, but I feel like it's something worth talking about again. Here's why. Messaging is different in politics than in news. Journalists do a story once and they're like, okay, that's done. I've put it out there. And then they can't figure out why people can't remember what stories they saw. Whereas in political messaging, they know you have to hit it over and over and over and over again. And only when you're sick of saying it, is it actually sinking in with the audience. And so,
Pat, even when you're sick of saying it, you keep on saying
it. You have to keep on saying it.
Over and over.
Which is why when you're hearing people saying, the economy sucks, the economy sucks, the economy sucks, the economy sucks, small wonder that once again, The Guardian put out a survey this week on how
very many people believe the country's in a recession. They say their finances are fine, but because they keep hearing the economy stinks, they think it stinks and it's working for the people in politics, not economists, politics, spreading that message.
Yeah, isn't it so interesting that there's this giant gap between how people feel their own finances are and how they feel the nation's finances are? And that can only come from hearing a constant drumbeat on Fox News and other right-wing media and not hearing enough from factual, you know, fact-based, documented mainstream media. The funny thing about this, Pat, is that when you see polls, you know, that show, you know, half the people think we're in a recession when we're clearly not and never have been under Biden, even though, just to be clear, New York Times was saying for years we're going to be. They were doing this kind of Cassandra, like disaster coming kind of thing for years. Then it didn't happen. And it was just kind of, oh, well, never mind, from the New York Times. And so they've never made up for the fact that they did all that disaster, you know, reporting. And so, you know, over and over and over, you know, there's recession. And I guess people who don't tune into the news really carefully, yeah, I can understand why they might think that, well, things are okay with me, but boy, they must be terrible around the country. And when the news media sees a poll like that, that shows that the public just has no understanding of what's actually going on in the economy based on numbers, based on actual facts and statistics, that the news media, many of them don't say, oh my gosh, we have failed in our job to inform the public. We have not done enough to make sure they understand the true status of the economy. That's a media failure. That's the media failing to understand that their job is to help inform the American people. If the American people are completely wrong about what's going on, it's their job to fix that.
It really is. I don't know that can ever be said enough, not to Americans, but to the journalists of America, that if the polling reflects, you know, people saying that the sky is not blue, that's a failing on you. It just is. It isn't your job to convince somebody to be a Democrat or Republican, but it is your job to make sure that the American public isn't getting basic facts wrong about democracy or the economy or things like that.
Yeah, well, and that's a really good point, that it's not a partisan issue to say that the sky is blue.
Exactly.
It's not. It's just it's saying the sky is blue. And the idea that, well, I don't know, if we tell people the sky is blue, well, that'll make people think that we are prejudiced in favor of the blue sky.
Of the guy telling the truth, right?
Yeah.
I know. Look, I'm always going to be one of Wall Street's first critics, but I'm also the first to tell you that there are actually, you know, Democrats on Wall Street or progressives. Not everybody is right wing. I've got a good friend from high school who, you know, became a whiz on Wall Street, became a big deal there, but never lost touch with his roots. I remember him telling me a dozen years ago, I said, you know, what is the one thing that this country could really use? And he said, an infrastructure bill. You know, that would do so much good. So I say all this to set up Steve Rattner. And I don't know if you know him, if you've met him, or if you follow him. I know he's regularly on MSNBC. And the only reason I bring him up is because of something that's visual that I have to say on this radio show, that if you were to look up Steve Rattner, Steve with a V and then Rattner, the graphs that he puts up, the visual aids that show where public perception is versus what the facts are about the economy, and on a whole notion of sectors, you know, Wall Street and, you know, consumer prices and wages and all these things, there's plenty of visual evidence out there. And I cannot believe that these very clear graphs, charts and things don't make it into more mainstream media. And I think it's just because, Mark, like you said, they're afraid that the truth somehow makes them appear partisan.
Yeah. I feel like that there's they've given up on trying to reach regular people. And Pat, I mean, this, you know, people talk about low information voters and, you know, and this, I mean, I don't feel like insulting people. I mean, not everyone needs to be a news geek like me. And
right.
I feel like that a lot of people have lives to live. They got to pick up their kids at school and stuff. I mean, nobody's going to be like reading the New York Times start to finish every day, or many people aren't. And that doesn't make them bad people. But the mainstream media does have this effect, if they say things enough in a clear enough way, of reaching people eventually, you know, of people, you know, the people who don't even watch the news. If they're, you know, they might watch a little news break in between, you know, in the middle of on halftime of the basketball game. I mean, there are ways of reaching people if the mainstream news media will even try. I mean, that's the thing that bothers me, is that, you know, there's a poll, there are all other polls out, Pat, that show that if you don't follow the news at all, if you just do not consume any news, you are overwhelmingly a Trump supporter. If you read a newspaper daily, you're overwhelmingly a Biden supporter. And that just goes to show that there are a lot of people out there who are not informed very much. And, you know, and again, I'm not rapping them. It's their choice. It's their life. But the mainstream media has a part to play in reaching those people in small ways, in big ways.
But now let's get to people who are informed and yet they willingly, you know, either, you know, say the things that root for the economy to fail or in any other way attach themselves to the former president. And as you, you know, said on social media this week, it's one thing for regular folks who might like Trump because, like you said, they're not news consumers. But now let's get to the Nikki Haley's, Elise Stefanik, right. J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, but specifically this week, Nikki Haley. Yeah. After everything she said during the primary campaign, where she was finding her voice, she was finding the voice of all kinds of moderate Republicans, mm-hmm. and then this week said, "Oh no, I'm going to vote for Trump."
Right, right.
What a favor she did us to not have to listen to her anymore, pretend to be something she never was.
Yeah, I mean, I was always very skeptical of her. If you look at her policies, you know, she's for like sending the military into Mexico and a lot of crazy stuff. She's for registering people on social media. There were a lot of policies that she actually came up with that are not moderate. And she's also just such an ambitious person, you know, personally ambitious. I respect politicians who are ambitious for their policies. You know, by God, I want to see, you know, healthcare be better for people. That's what politicians should be in favor of. But Nikki Haley, you know, she was always kind of talking on both sides of her mouth. The New York Times actually cynically praised her as, you know, as massaging her message for the moment. That was the phrase they used, which to me is an odd way to praise somebody for being a liar. You know, but that's the New York Times. That's the way they go. And so I wasn't disappointed, but it's not good. It's not good for the future of our democracy, you know, because people were viewing her as an alternative to Trump, as a way for the Republican Party to not just go to the dark side. And it seems to have. I mean, with certain rare exceptions who have been banished from the party, like Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney. I mean, it's grim. And I don't know how you come back from that, Pat. I mean, I'm almost at the stage now where I'm thinking it's democracy or the Republican Party. One of those two are going to survive and one is not.
Well,
my parents were Goldwater supporters. Mm-hmm. I'm not like some sort of flame. I didn't come out of some sort of socialist school up in, you know, the Catskills or something. I honestly understand that people want to be conservatives. And I think there's nothing wrong with having conservative views on a lot of subjects, but dishonest, lying, you know, just trashy, racist views are different from that.
Right. So this takes us to something that Donald Trump said just yesterday, that again, you know, back on Earth One would have been something that raised a great hue and cry of something that was practically anti-American to say. When he talked about the reporter for the Wall Street Journal, Evan Gershkovitz, who's been held by Russia and continues to be held by Russia. He's a hostage. And Donald Trump put up on his tiny social media site that Evan Gershkovitz will be released almost immediately after the election, but definitely before I assume office. He will be home, safe, and with his family. Vladimir Putin, president of Russia, will do that for me and not for anyone else, and we will be paying nothing. He is blackmailing voters, saying, if you want this reporter released, because if I don't win, he's going to stay in jail. That is so repugnant, and yet it doesn't lead any newscasts out there.
No, that's repulsive. I mean, that's really repulsive. Also, you know, if you can do it now. Go ahead.
Right.
Show us. Yep. Prove it. Yep. You know, if you really actually care about the reporter who's being unfairly imprisoned in Russia, you know, just blowing a call to your friend Vlad and let's get it done. But no, he doesn't want to do it because he's just lying as usual. But even Pat, even if he's telling the truth, that just shows that he's got, that he and Putin are pals.
Right.
And this is, I mean, here we are, you know, Trump, you know, declared for presidency 9 years ago. And we still are waiting for him to say a critical thing about Vladimir Putin. I mean, think about this. One of the worst dictators on the face of the earth, a guy who pushes people out of open windows and high floors, and who poisons his opponents, who kills journalists, who invades countries, who drops bombs on people, who sends troops in to rape people. And Donald Trump has yet to say a single thing that's negative about him. I mean, it's stunning to me that this isn't stunning to everyone.
You know, so I don't have a good answer for that one.
I know. I mean, a lot of what we say in this year could be punctuated with long sighs.
With,
I mean,
it's like, yes. And it's why we work so hard to get into, a holiday weekend. But we're going to come out of it with closing arguments, maybe a verdict. And I guess I don't want to speculate yet, because you can go all over the board on this. But let's at least start with the basics. Do we think that when we talk this time next week, there'll be a verdict one way or the other? Do we think a verdict could come that quickly? Or do you sense this is a jury that might have one or two people that is going to take a while?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I feel like you're going to give closings on Tuesday, right? Or jury right. instructions yep. and closings. Mm-hmm. I bet. I don't know. If I was a betting person, I would say, yeah, that there will be a verdict at the end of this week, this right. next week. I mean, I hope so. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, the evidence has been pretty.
Yeah. Oh, we lost Mark there. He blipped out. Hey, everybody, you can start your weekend 15 seconds early. That's totally fine by me. Mark, thank you so much. Dan Schumacher's next. You're up north. The only exception I make to Friday Yacht Rock in the summer is for this guy and his love of the Grateful Dead. Even Kia Vakil, who's got a great walk-up music from Tame Impala. We replaced that this week with Yacht Rock. But the Grateful Dead are untouchable. So that's where we get Dan Schumacher and Greg Bach to once again try to educate me on what we're listening to. This is Touch of Grey, right?
Yes,
no,
exactly.
No, this is a song called Ship of Fools, which basically is our whole political system right now.
Yeah.
It's, Ship of Fools.
It's a mess. But we've been talking about diversions today. The diversions of like getting on a boat, getting into the holiday weekend, or even the diversion of sports for the Cubs Brewers series that's going to start on Monday at American Family Field, or some people refer to it as Wrigley North. And I just can't even imagine the decibel level of both boos and cheers on Monday when Craig Counsell is introduced for the first time. I hope the announcers, TV and radio, are both smart enough to know when that moment is coming and shut up and let's hear it, because I just want to, it's going to be quite a moment, Dan. Going to be a moment.
Yeah. What time is that game on Monday? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't have my paper schedule in front of me.
I wouldn't mind sitting watching it just during the day. Our friend Bob Gallagher last night was calling for counsel to be fired.
What? Yeah.
Already?
That's Bob.
My
That's
God, because you're in second place.
That's yeah. Bob. Bob right away is the first one to say. That's it. It's done. It's like, Bob, the Bears are 0-2. It's okay. Nope. Got to fire everybody.
The game on Monday is a 3:10 game.
It's a 3:10 game, it says here, now that I found it on the interwebs, because I can't find my paper schedule. So
yeah, we'll grill out after the game. That'd be perfect.
So here was the question that I asked of Greg last hour, because I'm genuinely not sure in terms of Chicago fans. We know what the games are going to look like, you know, for the Cubs series, and that's four games. And then the White Sox are in for three. Will the White Sox series have as many Chicago fans? Are there enough White Sox fans who make the move because right now for the White Sox you can get tickets for 99 cents. Yep. So Are they? Will it be the same?
No.
No.
No. There's no comparison. There's just no comparison right now. Mm-hmm. You know, you got a Southside franchise that's just, to me, a mess. I think it's time for new ownership there, actually, especially. And now he wants another new stadium. I mean, they just built that stadium about within the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do stadiums not stay viable? There's stadiums all over this country that are, you know, 60 years old, 7 years old, but they want a new one paid by taxpayers along with
112 years old. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wrigley turns 112 this year.
Yeah. And they just keep putting, you know, more polish on the stones over there, you know, just to keep making it look kind of nice. But, you know, I don't know. I'm not a Sox fan. I don't like the way things have gone with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Southsider, but it's still it's a mess. It's a mess.
It really is. For folks wondering, the Cubs games are, like Dan said, Greg said, 3:10 on Monday, 6:40 on Tuesday and Wednesday, two evening games with the Cubs. And then Thursday is a day game. Next week, Thursday, 12:10 will be that one. And then the White Sox come in next week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I hear that for you, for Memorial Day weekend, you're taking a winter vacation.
Yeah, no pun intended, right?
No, totally pun intended. Tell you're going to the beautiful
Winter, Wisconsin.
You're going to the beautiful hamlet of Winter. Yes,
yep. Winter, Wisconsin. No, I'm gonna go do our annual side by side trip with a couple other people and couples, and enjoy a couple days of riding around the trails. It's good.
For folks not familiar with this, because I wasn't, and I'm not a dummy, you know. But when you said side by side the first couple of times, I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Then you pointed to basically it's an ATV with like a cover, you know. It's like a small car.
It's a two seater. It's like a two seater. Some have four seaters, and you know, we just travel around and do some sightseeing, do some visitation to some restaurants and some pubs. Mm-hmm. And enjoy that type of time. And you know, it doesn't look too promising for weather, but we still put our rain gear on and go.
I was gonna say, put your rain gear on, you go through the mud, you know, across the fields and everything. So no, that'll be
that sounds like the winter we had this year.
Hey, I started last week with the whole Scheffler thing at the golf outing, right?
Oh yeah, that's right. That was breaking when we visited last week.
Have you seen the new release video?
I have not. What do you make of it?
That policeman lied.
What? No way.
The video, he never got dragged. He was running alongside the car trying to bang on the window to get him stopped. He was going maybe 5 miles an hour. And so, boy,
I didn't see the video. I saw the headline that the officer did not turn his body camera on and was disciplined for that.
Yep.
To which, by the way, I'm hearing that way too often. You know, but that's a whole different conversation. So, again, what started off sounding like, you know, an athlete acting like a diva doesn't appear to be the case.
No, he doesn't seem that personality. That's why it was so surprising from someone like that. I mean, if they said Tiger Woods, well, you know, there's a chance that might be true.
They would never not allow Tiger Woods, though. That's, I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Also, the way you described it last week, from when it just, I mean, you kind of broke the story last week, and everything you just described, it seemed like the police were in the wrong because they were letting cars go through anyways, and he was in a vehicle, and he had all the credentials, all the need, and it was like, this doesn't make sense. Did he just not recognize this dude?
And there was a ton of witnesses, including ESPN people, that witnessed it firsthand, and I just see this going very south from the Louisville Police Department.
Which didn't have a stellar reputation to begin with, shall we say. So as far as the rest of the tournament went, I don't know if you, again, I didn't watch the golf. I know that after he got released from custody, he had like the round of his life.
He did.
Didn't go on to win the tournament, though. But
No, there was a great finish to that tournament with DeChambeau Scheffler.
Yeah.
Scheffler. Scheffler, what a great finish. They were battling down to the end. It was a one-stroke win.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's kind of like Tin Cup. You know, nobody's going to remember you lost the tournament, but they're going to remember the 15 you got on the last hole. You know, and nobody's going to remember who actually won and how it worked. They're going to remember that Scheffler got arrested in the parking lot and thrown in jail.
Yeah, that's what results of it. That's what got the headlines. So, all right, well, enjoy the time up there in winter in the side by side. Please be safe that way.
And I will, and I'll be back in Chippewa on Sunday. So,
okay, we'll be around. We got
you and I can prep for the Cubs Brewers game.
I sense that. Well, I know we'll be at the Mallard because we got family coming up. So look for that.
Yep.
All right, thanks, man. Have a great weekend.
See you guys.
Later. Take care, Dan.
We'll see you. Matt and Aaron Air. And then have fun in D.C.
I shall. Have a good time. Holiday weekend, sir.
Yep. Luke Mathers will be with me here on Tuesday, and then Greg back on Wednesday, right?
That's right.
I think I got that right. All right. Good. Hey, thanks for being here, everybody. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network, building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Thanks for joining us up here at the lake. Have a happy and safe weekend. A best of show on Monday. We'll see you Tuesday morning at 6:00.